Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody has the day off taking care of other business. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. If Melody can't answer, leave her a message. She'll call you back as soon as she's off the phone with the other client. For the next hour, I'm going to be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political events of the day, Thursday. Jeez, November 30th, 2023 already. Hey, happy National Computer Security Day, ladies and gentlemen, which reminds us to protect our personal computers and other electronic devices. Protecting the resources, tools, and information on them protects the people who use them, us. Since the first home computer came out decades ago, how we use them has changed a lot. Today, we use computers to stay connected. We bank and work from home. We do our taxes, attend virtual meetings, and research issues, small and large, all on our home computers. So it makes sense to do everything possible to keep these powerful machines secure, right? Precious and irreplaceable photos, journals, novels, passwords. Our very identity exists on our computers. And identity theft, fraud, ransomware, and viruses constantly are getting our computers' firewalls' attention. They seek the most vulnerable users among us in an instant. They can take us offline, sometimes for good, and worse, hold our information hostage. So protect your family and business by giving your computers a security checkup today. Let's take a look at today's markets. First, in the precious metal world, gold a little bit down today. Coming off a high of 2044, it's now down about $8, a little shy of $8, 2036, we'll round it to about 0.4%. Silver up about 1% at $25.33. Platinum down just $2 at $940. And palladium down about 1.7%, $17 at $1,034. In other markets, the U.S. dollar index up today by about 3/4 of a percentage point, 103.52. And the Treasury market reflecting that. The 10-year yield at 4.34%. That's up a little bit. The 2-year yield still showing that inverted curve, but declining significantly from where it had been several months ago, actually just a few weeks ago. In fact, that's at 4.70% today. In fact, right now, the 3-month Treasury bill is the only thing, Treasury I'm seeing that's over 5%. That's still at 5.4. In other commodities, we have natural gas up a slight tad at 2.81, we'll call it. In the oil markets, international Brent at 82.85, down about a quarter. Domestic West Texas intermediate crude down about almost 3% today at 75.65. And then to the equities, down day, we have the Dow Jones actually closing up about 1.5%, 520 points, 35,951. The S&P 500 up about 0.4, 17 points at 4,568, we'll call it. NASDAQ down 32 points, 14,226. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Coins Market Report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Well, a lot of news out there in the last day of November. Got another inflation reading, the Fed's preferred number. Inflation measured by personal spending increased in line with expectations last month, possibly giving the Fed more incentive to hold rates steady when it again meets on the 12th and 13th, and perhaps even start cutting in 2024. Now, according to the Commerce Department data that was released earlier today, the Personal Consumption's Expenditure Price Index, excluding food and energy prices, rose 0.2% in October, 3.5% on a year-over-year basis. And both those numbers lined up with a consensus of experts. Headline inflation, including those, was flat, 3% rate for the 12-month period. Energy prices fell 2.6% in the month, and that certainly was keeping overall inflation in check, even as food prices increased another 0.2%. Goods saw a 0.3% increase, while services rose 0.2%. On the services side, the biggest gainers were international travel, healthcare, and food services, and accommodations. In goods, gasoline led the gainers. Personal income and spending both rose 0.2% on the month, also meeting estimates and indicating that us consumers, or I should say we consumers, are keeping pace with inflation. I know a lot of you out there would beg to differ, and rightly so. While the public more closely watches the Labor Department's Consumer Price Index as an inflation measure, the Fed again prefers this core PCE reading. CPI primarily looks at what goods and services cost, while the PCE focuses on what people actually spend, adjusting for consumer behavior when prices fluctuate up and down. Comerica Bank's chief economist Bill Adams said the Fed's on hold for now, but their pivot to rate cuts is getting closer. Well, we shall see. Markets already had been pricing in the likelihood that the Fed's done with raising interest rates this tightening cycle, and the PCE reading, along with the signs of a somewhat loosening labor market, should solidify that stance for now. Along with the anticipation that the rate hikes are over, markets are also pricing in the equivalent of 0.75 percentage point cut rate cuts next year. Now, New York Fed President John Williams said this morning that he expects inflation to continue to drift lower, finally hitting the Fed's 2% target in 2025. However, he said policymakers will need to stay vigilant and keep rates at a restrictive level. Excuse me. Specifically, he said we are at or near the peak level of the target range of the Fed funds rate. I expect it will be appropriate to maintain a restrictive stance for quite some time to fully restore balance and to bring inflation back to our longer run goal on a sustained basis. Of course, the Fed funds rate, the bank's benchmark level for short-term lending, is in a range between 5.25% and 5.5% right now. It's highest in over 20 years. After implementing 11 hikes since March 2022, the Fed left rates alone at its last two meetings. And most of those, their policymakers have been recently indicating, I say most, that they're content right now to watch the impact of the previous increases work, take effect, work their way through the economy. The other economic signals lately have shown the economy overall to be in fairly good shape, though several Fed officials said just this week that the data doesn't square with the comments they're hearing on the ground. For example, Richmond Fed President Tom Barkin said, I'm hearing consumers slowing down. I'm not hearing the consumer falling off the table. I'm hearing normalizing, not recession, but I am hearing consumer slowing down. Well, that's enough Fed speak for the moment. With gold trading back above 2,000 for the first time since May, some are saying its price could surge to new highs in 2024. That's especially amid expectations that the Fed will cut interest rates next year by up to 150 basis points. According to analysts, anyway, at Societe Generale, in their latest outlook, the bank's commodity analyst noted, quote, by December 2024, the bank expects the Fed funds rate to be 150 points lower than it is now, U.S. Treasury yields to decline to 4%, and oil prices to average 87.50 per barrel. U.S. economy is expected to slow materially after overheating in the third quarter this year, while Europe should avoid recession and China's growth should gradually recover. The analysts believe that if this scenario plays out, inflation concerns recede, rate hikes don't break anything, the yield curve steepens, and the dollar corrects. La-di-da, la-di-da. Lower interest rates, they note, will benefit gold as the Fed pushes more liquidity out of bonds and into other markets, while uncertainty around geopolitical tensions around the world will drive investors to seek the safety of the world's oldest store of value, leading to an increase in the price of gold. The report also said, unlike oil, gold prices have increased by 8% since the start of the Israeli-Hamas conflict. Gold has continued to ignore the rising real yield headwinds as demand has remained robust. Now, the bank did say a major source of demand for gold and support for its price has been the global South central banks, which have been increasing their gold reserves in recent months. It notes that China, the metal has been one of the sources of diversification into real assets, along with oil. Coalition of countries in the global south that should continue to de-dollarize and give a further boost to gold. Bank analysts see the potential for the Hamas-Israeli conflict to push oil prices to $150 per barrel under the worst-case scenario of escalation, as available unused production capacity is very high. These factors, it says, are expected to be a boon for gold in 2024. As noted in their previous report, the bank sees the push above 2,000 as the start of a bigger rally that could see prices hitting 2,200 through most of next year. Pending home sales. That's a measure of signed contracts on existing homes. They dropped the 1.5% in October over September, hitting the lowest level since the National Association of Realtors began tracking this metric all the way back in 2001. Translation, it's even worse than readings during the Great Recession well over a decade ago. Sales were down 8.5% from October of last year. Now, because this index measures signed contracts, it's the most recent indicator of housing demand. It reflects the buyers who were out shopping in October, which was when the popular 30-year fixed-rate mortgage briefly shot higher than 8%. Rates have since pulled back to around 7.3, according to Mortgage News Daily. Excuse me. Continue to be plagued with the winter coughs. My apologies. The realtors say it's not just high rates, though, but still the very low supply of homes for sale. That's deflating activity. The realtors chief economist Lawrence Young said recent weeks successive declines in mortgage rates will help qualify more home buyers, but limited housing inventory is significantly preventing housing demand from being fully. Pending sales fell in all regions except in the Northeast. They fell most steeply out west, which is where homes, well, are more expensive. They're the most, in fact. Sales were down everywhere else compared with a year ago. The tight supply and still strong demand have kept pressure on home prices, which not only continue to hit new highs, but actually appear to be accelerating in their gains. And the realtors note that sales of homes priced above $750,000 have been increasing simply because there's just more supply on the high end of the market. It's Jobless Claims Thursday. Slightly more Americans filed for jobless claims last week, but the overall number of people in the U.S. collecting unemployment benefits rose to its highest level in 2 years. Application for unemployment benefits rose by 7,000 to 218,000 for the week ending November 25th. It's according to the Labor Department's most recent report out this morning. However, 1.93 million Americans were collecting unemployment benefits the week ending November 18th. That's 86,000 more than the previous week and the most in 2 years. Continuing claims have risen in 9 of the past 10 weeks. And that's a particular sign of the job market loosening. Jobless claim applications are seen as representing the number of layoffs in a given week. Analysts say that in particular, the continuing claims are rising because many of those who are already unemployed may now be having a harder time finding new work. And while the labor market does remain strong, some softness is beginning to show cracks. Hiring has slowed from that breakneck pace of 2021 and 2 when the economy rebounded from the pandemic recession. Employers added a record 606,000 jobs a month in 2021 and about 400,000 a month last year. So far this year, monthly hiring has averaged a still solid 239K, but it's come in below 200 in 3 of the last 5 months. Employers are also posting fewer job openings. Today's labor data also showed that the 4-week moving average of jobless claim apps, which flattens out some of the weekly volatility, fell very, very slightly to 220,000. Now, we're just about out of time for our first segment, so we'll finish this next story when we come back. But Melody and I did start talking about this on Tuesday, but ran out of time before she left. So the Fed has announced it will need 4 more years to cover an historic operating loss and start sending profits again to the U.S. Treasury. That's according to new research from the St. Louis Fed. There's the music. More on that story when we come back. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Doing the show today without Melody, who's taking care of other important client business. The office number again, 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver needs. Right before the break, we were talking about the Fed needing 4 more years to cover a big operating loss. These losses are the result of the Fed's rate rise cycle, which saw it sharply increase its interest rate target while at the same time shrinking the size of its balance sheet, both of which are being done to make monetary policy tight enough to cool higher levels of inflation. The movement of these two policy actions drove the Fed to start losing money in September last year. The Fed captures the net negative income situation in an accounting measure called a deferred asset, which as of November 22nd stood at $120.4 billion. As the Fed sees it, the deferred asset is what has to be covered before it can again return excess earnings to the Treasury. The Fed's repeatedly stressed that losing money in no way impacts its ability to operate and conduct monetary policy. Oh, darn. The research from the St. Louis Fed estimates it will cover the deferred asset by mid-2027. Now, interestingly, the Fed's losses are essentially without precedent in its entire history. The Fed funds its work through services it provides to the banking sector and from interest income generated by the Treasury and mortgage bonds that it owns. Whatever the Fed earns beyond its operating expenses is then returned to the Treasury Department each year for use as general government revenue. For years, the Fed has been a steady money maker. That near zero Fed funds rate, coupled with the income it earned from a massive balance sheet that got close to, well, $9 trillion in April 2022, has allowed it to hand back nearly $1 trillion to the government over the past decade. In 2022 alone, the Fed handed back $76 billion after returning $109 billion the year before. But that changed last fall when the Fed funds rate moved high enough over the income it received from bonds and services to tip the Fed over into a loss. Now, the red ink further mounted as the Fed funds rate, now, as we mentioned, between 5.25% and 5.5%, rose, while the trillions in bonds owned by the Fed and generating income contracted. Uncertainty over the monetary policy outlook complicates estimating how great the ultimate size of the Fed's loss will be, when it will stop, and when the Fed will cover the deferred asset and start giving money back to the Treasury. Earlier this year, the New York Fed estimated the Fed would return to profitability in 2025, which will allow it to start paying down the deferred asset. Hey, it's time for our weekly segment, Levity is Golden. Today's topic is rage and stress and anxiety and a novel way of dealing with them. Now, imagine a room full of old TVs, plates, mugs, chairs, and other breakables. You walk in with a big baseball bat and are free to smash it all. These spaces are dubbed rage rooms, and they're getting more popular as a way to let go of stress. Interest in these rage rooms has more than doubled in social media searches this year compared with last. Of course, rage rooms, while novel, I guess you could say, may not be the most effective long-term remedy for tension. But stress is on the rise in America. 1 in 4 adults surveyed rate their stress levels between 8 and 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, that's according to a recent study by the American Psychological Association. Now, research doesn't indicate that participating in rage rooms has any noticeable effects to reduce that either, but perhaps for the time you're in there smashing it up, making whatever grunts and other sounds and screams you may be making, maybe that helps. Clinical psychologist Chloe Carmichael observes, if you have a pre-existing pattern of breaking things and want to find a safe way to satisfy that urge, well, you can try a rage room. But I wouldn't necessarily encourage or recommend it to someone newly seeking stress relief options. Well, certainly, there are other productive ways to channel our energy when experiencing stress, anxiety, anger, or all of them at once. Carmichael suggests to address and set a boundary around what's causing the stress and anger in the first place. Then consider beneficial ways of coping, like working out, for example, whether on a treadmill or in a kickboxing class, which can harness your extra energy while helping you develop a skill. Or go for a short but brisk run. If you're healthy enough to do so, working up a sweat and releasing some of what's bugging you. Take him or her with you. Float therapy in your bathtub with Epsom salts, she says, relaxes your muscles and removes the element of gravity for a calm sensory experience. Or very hot or cold shower can also provide immediate relief from the stress with tactile and sound sensations of the water. Or go to a dark, quiet room and meditate or pray with long, deep breaths for 10 to 15 minutes. Or have a good and healthy shout in the closet. And I mean a loud shout. Whatever you do, though, don't channel your rage, anxiety, or stress by taking it out on others. Or keep it bottled up inside your head. Either of those alternatives will inevitably lead to a lot of trouble, even broken relationships and declining health. If all else fails, check out a local counselor or therapist who's trained to help you deal with what's ailing you. Bottom line, life's too short to spend it grumpy. Besides, it's Christmas time. And that is this week's Levity is Golden. Well, as we know, the federal government's debt load has ballooned the last few years, just as some of the biggest buyer of treasury bonds, like China and the Fed, have begun to buy less, and a lot less in some cases. Now, that's usually a recipe for rising interest costs or botched treasury auctions and a growing chorus of warnings that the nation's balance sheet is just not sustainable. Yesterday, Mark Cabana, who heads U.S. rate strategy at the Too Big to Fail Bank of America's Global Research, said that he sees treasury demand growing as peak interest rates in the U.S. change the global bond market dynamics. He said, quote, there's a lot of supply of treasuries that's coming, and there are real questions about who's going to buy those bonds. We are cautiously optimistic that we will see greater treasury demand over the course of 2024 than we saw over the course of 2023, unquote. Now, since rates aren't expected to go up much or at all from here, he believes treasury prices should finally stop falling, and that they'll again be considered a safer and more reliable store of value, a feature that's been absent over the last several years because treasury rates have been rising so rapidly. That, he added, should increase demand for treasuries from a wide range of investors like asset managers, pensions, and insurers, even banks. Overseas, investors, especially in Europe and the UK, are likely to top up on treasuries as part of a foreign exchange hedge since the dollar is going to likely depreciate. And these things are good for gold and silver. So make sure you have an adequate amount, in fact, a little more than adequate amount, in your portfolio. Currencies often depreciate as their nation's interest rates go down, and that's already started happening to the U.S. dollar. Cabano also noted, we anticipate a bit of a pickup from the overseas investor community, largely of what we expect to happen to the dollar. Now, a growing base of treasury buyers won't make America's balance sheet more viable, but some do believe it'll make it easier and maybe even cheaper to fund the boatloads of bonds it needs to issue in the coming year. Well, it looks like consumer spending has extended to their charitable giving again this year, but nonprofit organization Giving Tuesday estimates that donors gave $3.1 billion this year in what's become one of the most important fundraising days of the year, the Tuesday after Thanksgiving. Donations were up $20 million on Tuesday. It's about a 0.6% increase over last year, before adjusting for inflation. Giving Tuesday makes its estimates by drawing on data from donor management software companies and other places. Woodrow Rosenbaum, who's Giving Tuesday's chief data officer, said, on the one hand, this is fantastic. Tens of millions of people in the U.S. came together once again to have a huge impact for causes they care about, including donating an enormous amount of money in a 24-hour period. On the other hand, he notes, the number of donors, excuse me, was down about 10% from 2022, which Rosenbaum actually called a worst-case scenario for the nonprofit sector. He said, quote, we're seeing less dollars from the big donor that we've been relying upon and fewer grassroots donors who are so important to our resilience and long-term health of the sector. Nonprofit organizations and industry groups have been warning that donations this year are down, and it follows an overall drop in charitable giving in 2022 for only the fourth time in 40 years. It's still too early to know whether end of year 2023 giving will pull charitable donations back up this year. Elaine Koenig, who's chief communications officer at Vanguard Charitable, which host donor advised fund said about 30% of the total grant dollars donated from those accounts each year go out in the last 2 months of the calendar year. And Naomi Thompson, who works for a cancer charity in Northern Ireland, said giving is the nicest thing and the best thing to do, and you get more from it than probably what you give, especially when donors feel like they have less to give. She suggested really considering whether the organization's work makes an impact on the donor's community. Giving Tuesday estimates don't include gifts to mutual aid groups, donations to political organizations, or gifts made directly to individuals. Still, the results could indicate further difficult economic times on the horizon. Well, several GOP lawmakers expect former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy to step down from his House seat before the end of the year. The potential, if not likely, exit of McCarthy, who supposedly privately told donors he's looking to get the H out, could leave the House GOP with an even narrower majority, especially depending on what happens with the George Santos exile vote, I'm calling it, tomorrow. I have another week or so to decide, McCarthy said, because if I decide to run again, I have to know in my heart I'm giving 110%. He said that to an audience at the New York Times Deal Book Summit yesterday, referring to California's December 8th filing deadline. That's what I would call imminent. He said, I have to know that I want to do that, that is run again. I also have to know if I'm going to walk away, that I'm going to be fine with walking away. So I'm really taking this time now. In any case, speculation over his potential departure escalated ahead of the Thanksgiving recess, with multiple GOP sources noted he posted a photo on Instagram that apparently showed his district office in the process of being packed. The GOP's razor-thin majority in the House is already on the verge of being diminished further by the potential, some say likely, expulsion of Long Island Congressman George Santos, again in a vote expected tomorrow. Some senior GOP lawmakers have noted the awkward nature of shifting from leading the Republican conference to being a rank-and-file member. Tensions between McCarthy and his critics have continued to flare up since his historic ouster. Some rank-and-file members voiced frustration with McCarthy attempting to kneecap, in their words, multiple candidates that aim to succeed him as Speaker, arguing that those efforts minimized a lot of the sympathy he gained after his initial ouster. One lawmaker said of his influence over the conference, the image in the rearview mirror is getting smaller by the day. I don't think he's having a good time being a regular Joe. McCarthy's allies, on the other hand, have praised his tenure, applauding his fundraising prowess and leadership skills, but said they wouldn't blame him for leaving, given the circumstances. And his critics sure do remain vocal about their grievances. Florida's Matt Gaetz sarcastically noted, I suspect former Speaker will return to spend more time with people he's always represented, Wall Street and K Street. I don't imagine he'll be walking the streets of Bakersfield, which is a city represented in California. Damn shame, another McCarthy critic quipped, predicting that the former Speaker will likely use millions in political action funds to meddle in the races of the House Republicans who voted to oust him. Proving once again, ladies and gentlemen, that politics makes strange bedfellows and long memories for scorned members. Hey, right, just quickly before the break, many eyes focused on the Israel-Gaza-Ukraine-Russia conflicts. The U.S.-China relationship was a dominant theme at the New York Times Deal Book Summit yesterday. Another was a potential conflict with Taiwan. Well, Taiwan's president told the audience, the Chinese leadership at this juncture is overwhelmed by its internal challenges. My thought is that perhaps this isn't a time for them to consider a major invasion of Taiwan, because the international community has made it loud and clear that war is not an option and peace and stability serves everybody's interest. JP Morgan, Chase CEO, Jamie Dimon also commented that no one thinks an invasion is going to happen. Well, let's hope they're right. Only time will tell. We're up for another break. I hope you're going to stick around. I'll be back after these short messages. Come on,
since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. In today's first segment, I talked about the government's latest inflation report. It's measured by the PCE index. But what the report doesn't point out is that young and low-income Americans are experiencing inflation at higher rates than other folks. That's according to a new report out yesterday from the New York Fed. Though inflation rates have come down this year substantially, they're still elevated, which especially hurts lower-income Americans who are far more likely to feel the pain of higher prices. As Fed Chair Jerome Powell said last year, the burdens of high inflation fall heaviest on those who are least able to bear them. Housing costs in particular, which ran hotter than overall inflation this year, or is running, I should say, the year's not quite over, really pinch lower income and young Americans, and both groups are far more likely to rent than own a home. In October, the bottom 40% of income earners experienced inflation rates, looks like 0.016 percentage points higher than the average, implying a 3.4% inflation rate compared with 3.2% overall CPI number. Now, households headed by someone under the age of 25 saw a rate that was 30.35, excuse me, points higher. Meanwhile, higher earnings households saw a slightly lower than average rate of inflation, not surprising. Differences seem small, but over the course of a year and longer, they add up. And research from the Dallas Fed shows that inflation tends to be much more stressful for lower income households. Maybe we'll see a trend here of rage rooms opening up in Texas and the South. Well, a particular note, some economists argue that because wage growth for lower income folks has been good recently, it reduces the effects of the inflation imbalance somewhat anyway. Everyone experiences inflation differently. Your personal rate of inflation depends on where you live and what you need to buy. Also, what you want to buy. If you drive to work every day, higher gas prices are certainly more painful. If you're a renter, housing inflation is a beast right now. Lower-income Americans spend more of their income on necessities and can't simply reduce spending or buy cheaper goods to deal with higher prices, as the Dallas Fed paper notes. You know what? They're already buying the cheaper stuff. And tomorrow is the last day for Fed officials to express themselves publicly before the customary blackout period ahead of a policy meeting. Here's some recent talk that stood out to us. Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic calls greater clarity about the direction of the economy, embracing a narrative that inflation will continue falling as the impact of past interest rate hikes is felt. In a note published on the bank's website, he said that one of our economists calls the current economic picture a Rorschach test of conflicting signals. You may see a dragon, someone else sees a butterfly. He then describes the butterfly I see, saying that our research and input from business leaders tell me the downward trajectory of inflation will likely continue, and that our intelligence leads me to believe economic activity will slow in the coming months. New York Fed President John Williams sounded less confident about where things are headed. Again, in a speech this morning, he essentially affirmed the Fed is probably done raising rates, but stuck to the higher rates for longer narrative, pouring cold water on the possibility of near-term rate cuts. He said the risks are two-sided, with the possibility of inflation remaining stubbornly persistent, weighted against the risk of a weaker economy and employment. And he added, my assessment is that we are at or near the peak level of the target range of the federal funds rate. I expect it will be appropriate to maintain a restrictive stance for quite some time to quash inflation. Well, tomorrow morning, the weekend's with Jerome Powell participating in a fireside chat at Spelman College in Atlanta, followed by an afternoon roundtable that also includes a Spelman alum and fellow Fed governor, Lisa Cook. Should be interesting. Axios's Matt Phillip asks, if you suffer a loss but don't acknowledge it, is it really a loss? Well, Phillip's tongue-in-cheek question was at the heart of the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, which sparked a weeks-long semi-financial panic earlier this year, during which the second, third, and fourth largest bank failures in U.S. history occurred. Well, yesterday, the FDIC released its third quarter update on the state of the nation's banks. Not surprisingly, it said the U.S. banking system is healthy, with high and stable profits and solid scores on the performance of most kinds of outstanding loans, wouldn't you know? But the surge in interest rates, which pushes down the value of fixed income securities that banks own, continues to inflict large paper losses. In fact, the FDIC insured banks reported unrealized losses of $684 billion in the third quarter. That's an alarming $126 billion, or 23%. Higher than the $558 billion in the second quarter. 558 is pretty doggone high. An unrealized loss, by definition, is essentially the difference between the price a bank paid for bonds in their investment portfolio and the current market price for those securities. Under generally accepted accounting principles, banks don't have to actually realize the losses on their balance sheets unless and until they sell the bonds. Well, that's basically what Silicon Valley Bank was forced to do when it needed to raise cash this past spring, ultimately leading to its collapse. The Fed launched a new programs after Silicon Valley's failure to drastically reduce the risk that the unrealized losses would lead to more collapses. But as Pam and Russ Martins reported in a late September edition of their Wall Street on Parade newsletter, unrealized losses on too big to fail banks' balance sheets could be a much bigger problem than we've been led to believe. Adding to the financial stress of the nation's 25 largest banks, their deposits have fallen by $920 billion since April last year. Now, part of that's probably because of higher interest rates offered by some shorter-term treasuries and some smaller banks. But a chunk of it no doubt stems from lingering fears caused by the bank failures earlier this year. Under another even more controversial accounting rule, held to maturity, or HTM for short, held to maturity debt instruments are not marked to market or shown on a bank's balance sheet at fair value. Instead, as the Martins note in their September 25th newsletter, they're listed at amortized cost, effectively what was paid for the debt instrument at the time of its purchase, even if its current market value is 20 or 30% or more below its original cost. The Martins say that the HTM accounting treatment is allowing banks to create an illusion on their balance sheet as to what their assets are really worth. It's not good. Not good for shareholders of the bank. It's not good for taxpayers who might be on the hook for any bailout that occurs. Excuse me, with some of these, particularly mega banks. Because the bigger the dollar amounts held as HTM investment securities, the bigger the illusion. Yeah, fair value for HTM securities and unrealized losses are provided in supplemental charts and subsequent SEC filings, but it's not reflected in the asset value in the balance sheet itself. Again, leaving shareholders and taxpayers clueless about the bank's assets market, actual market value at any given time. The largest bank in the U.S., J.P. Morgan Chase, the Martins note, has transferred massive amounts of securities in this held to maturity category. According to J.P. Morgan Chase's 10-K for the period ending December 31st last year, it was holding over $425 billion in HTM securities, which actually had a fair market value of just $388.6 billion, or an unrealized loss of $36.7 billion. As of June 30th, Bank of America, the second largest U.S. bank, showed a 17% loss on its HTM debt securities versus 8.2% at J.P. Morgan and 9.3% at Citibank. I mean, you remember Citibank, right? The too-big-to-fail bank that literally imploded in 2008, ended up as a 99-cent stock the year later before it got a $1.2 trillion secret bailout from the Fed to shore it back up? Yes, that's Citibank. Look, this is just another example of the failure of the Fed, the OCC, the FDIC, and the Congress to properly supervise the nation's banks on behalf of the American taxpayers, who again would be on the hook for another bailout. Here's an interesting item. An employee of India's government directed a plot to assassinate an American citizen in New York City. That's alleged by federal prosecutors in a dramatic indictment that was unsealed this morning. Charges brought against an Indian man who prosecutors say was part of the plot threaten to upend relations between Washington in Delhi. The foiled plot, allegedly led by a senior field officer responsible for intelligence, targeted an attorney who advocated for a separate Sikh country to be carved out of India. Canada's government made similar claims around a Sikh separatist murder in British Columbia that led to a major diplomatic crisis there. The indictment says the intended victim is a vocal critic of the Indian government and leads a U.S.-based organization that advocates for the secession of Punjab. Punjab is a state in northern India that's home to a large population of Sikhs as an ethno-religious minority group in India. The intended victim has publicly called for some or all of Punjab to secede from India and establish a Sikh sovereign state called Khalistan. As a result, the Indian government has banned him and his separatist organization from the country, India. The Biden administration has attempted to improve ties with India, now the world's most populous country, to counter China in the region. So it's going to be interesting to see where this ongoing investigation ends up, especially if the Indian government knew about or was involved in this plot. Hey, last today, former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger died yesterday at the age of 100. He's drawing praise today as a skilled defender of U.S. interests and a powerful diplomat. He served two presidents, Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, and dominated foreign policy as the U.S. withdrew from Vietnam and established ties with China. On social media, though, he's being widely cast as a war criminal who left lasting damage throughout the world. Here are some comments, both pro and con. Former President George W. Bush. I have long admired the man who fled the Nazis as a young boy from a Jewish family, then fought them in the United States Army. China's President Xi Jinping. Dr. Kissinger will always be remembered and missed by the Chinese people. Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida paid tribute to Kissinger, saying, I myself had the privilege of meeting him in person a number of times since I was younger and had the honor of learning from his insights. Rolling Stone magazine, on the other hand, begged to differ, saying Henry Kissinger, war criminal, beloved by America's ruling class, finally dies. Across South America, Kissinger's being remembered as a key figure that helped prop up bloody military dictatorships, claiming they would stop socialism throughout the region. Chile's ambassador to the U.S., Juan Gabriel Valdez, said, a man has died whose historical brilliance never managed to conceal his profound moral misery. Whoa. Elizabeth Becker, who's author of When the War Was Over, Cambodia and the Khmer Rouge Revolution, said Kissinger heedlessly extended and expanded the war in Vietnam. And finally, Henry Kissinger's bombing campaign likely killed hundreds of thousands of Cambodians and set a path for the ravages of the Khmer Rouge. That's according to Sofal Ear, a scholar at Arizona State University. Whew. The good, the bad, and the ugly. R.I.P. Henry. That's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, Melody, back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog in your inboxes in the morning. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I am Dave Allen. Please be safe out there and have a good evening. Bye-bye.